Hello and welcome to Pardes from Jerusalem, the podcast series from the Pardes Institute of Jewish Studies in Jerusalem. I'm Larry Kluger, a Pardes alum. This week, Chukat. This week, Rabbi Alex Israel discusses Chukat. Rabbi Alex Israel is a member of the Pardes faculty. And now, Rabbi Alex Israel.
Thank you, Larry. This week's Parsha, this week's Torah portion is Parsha Chukat. And once again, we're going to see the Israelites traveling through the wilderness. Bnei Israel go through the Midbar. And we're going to hear them complaining again. They're going to face all sorts of challenges. And whereas we've been accustomed over the past few weeks to hear about how these challenges brought the Jewish people to disaster, this week I think we're actually going to find that we have a happier ending. And I'm going to try and use today's podcast, today's shiur, to explain why. How does the traveling and the complaints of Parshat Chukat, chapter 20 and 21 of the book of Bamidbar, how do these complaints and how do these arduous challenges of the wilderness differ? Why is this going to be a happy story rather than a disaster? So first, what we have to do is read a little bit of the story, and we're going to engage in two episodes. The first will describe a war against the king of Arad. We'll ask a couple of questions. And the second will describe the story of the fiery serpents. And then we'll try and do a little bit of analysis. Let's start with the first story. I'm reading from the beginning of chapter 21. Vayishma ha-Kanani melech Arad, yoshev ha-Negev, ki ba Yisrael derech ha-Atarim. A little bit of background. The Israelites have been denied access to be able to travel through the land of Edom. And therefore they have to skirt the land of Edom. They have to go through a long trek in order to go around its borders. And it seems like part of this trek takes them derech ha-Atarim. Some people think this is the interesting mountain climb or descent of Ma'ale Akrabim today. But we read that the Canaanite king of Arad, who dwelt in the Negev, saw that Israel was coming by the way of Atarim. He attacked Israel in battle and took some of them captive. Vayilachem b'Israel v'yashb mimenu shevi. Rashi even says it wasn't many captives, but it was just a single soldier who was taken as a prisoner of war. And Israel responded in the following way. Vayidar Yisrael neder Lashem vayomar im naton titein et ha'am hazeh biyadi vacharamti et harehem. Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if you will deliver this people into our hand, we will proscribe their towns. We will dedicate their towns to God. All the property will not be our loot. It will all be dedicated to the temple or to God, etc. And indeed, the text continues, Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael. The Lord heeded Israel's plea and delivered the Canaanites, and they and their cities were dedicated to God, and that's called Cherem, and therefore the place was called Chorma. Three lines, three verses. Why do we need to hear about this story? We're told that a local lord or a local Bedouin chief, a king of Arad, I don't think Arad, even today, Arad is not a particularly big town. Then, I imagine Arad was also not particularly large settlement. The king of Arad attacks the Israelites, has a little bit of success, and Israel fight back. They dedicate the spoils to God. Is this memorable? Is this something we need to know? Why are we told this story at this particular juncture? What does it contribute to our understanding? That's story number one. Immediately following this, chapter 21, verse 4, we hear a story of, which sounds very familiar, Israel complaining again. I'll read the text. Vayisu mehor ha-har derech Yamsuf. They go, depart from Hor ha-har, the way of Yamsuf, to circuit Eret Edom. Vatiksar nefesh ha-am baderech. The people grew restive on the journey, or maybe they grew restive with the journey. Vayidaber ha'am b'Elohim uv Moshe. And the people spoke against God, against Moses, and said, why did you make us leave Egypt to die in the wilderness? Lama ha'elitanu Mitzrayim lamut b'midbar, ki ein lechem ve'ein mayim. There is no bread and there is no water. And we've become to loathe this miserable food. We hate this manna. At hafshenu katza b'lechem ha'krokeh. So the people complain. What happens next? We're waiting for some punishment. Vayishalach Hashem ba'amitana chashim ha'srafim. Vayinashchu et ha'am. Vayamat am rav Yisrael. The Lord sent serpents against the people. They bit the people and many of the Israelites died. And the people came to Moshe and they said, we've sinned by speaking against the Lord and against you. Chatanu ki dibarnu b'ashem v'bach. Pray to God and take the serpents away. And Moses indeed did pray for the people. And the Lord said to Moshe, make a seraph, a serpent figure, and mount it on a pole. And if anyone is bitten, he will look at it and he will recover. Asei lecha saraf, v'simoto al nes, v'haya kol hanashuch, v'ra'a oto, v'chai, v'yas Moshe nechash nechoshet. Moses made a copper serpent and mounted it on a pole. And when anyone was bitten by a serpent, he would look at the copper serpent and recover and would live. And then the text continues with their journeys. What is going on with this story? It seems to lack a sense of drama. And one of the most interesting things that I have always wondered is the fact that God doesn't seem to get angry. In the earlier stories that we've seen, there's always a crisis. In chapter 11, the story of Kibron HaTava, Moshe collapses in a sense of wonderment. How can the Israelites complain in the story of the spies? God gets very, very angry. In the story of Korach, last week's parasha, we see all the leadership collapse. But now, what happens? We see the people complain. And it's a sort of a bizarre complaint. Maybe I'll read the verse. They say, Ein lechem ein mayim v'lashenu katza b'lechem ha'klokel. There is no bread and there is no water. And we've come to loathe, and the JPS translated as this miserable food, but if you read the Hebrew, there is no bread and there is no water, but we're sick of this bread. So there is bread. They just don't like it. What's going on here? The punishment is also very interesting, because God sends serpents, but then immediately, without getting angry, provides them a solution. Moses prays. God provides a solution, there's no drama. This seems to lack a lot of the pathos of the stories we're used to. And I'd like to try and probe these stories and understand that I think we are in a whole different era and there are different things going on here than were going on previously. I'm going to take a step back and try and explain where we are historically, and then you'll see just how different these stories are. Let's begin from chapter 20. The first line of chapter 20 tells us that Miriam dies. Miriam, Moses' sister, dies. At the end of chapter 20, Aaron dies. In the middle of chapter 20, we have the story where Moses and Aaron hit the rock, and apparently this is inappropriate, and God tells them that because you did not trust me enough or have faith in me to affirm my sanctity in the light of the Israelite people, you will not lead this congregation into the land that I have given them. Chapter 20 describes the disintegration of the leadership, the traditional leadership of which has led Israel in the wilderness. Miriam is dead, Aaron is dead, and Moses is already told that he will not be able to lead the people into the land. Something is changing. I'm wondering also where we are historically in that long spread of 40 years, that long journey from Egypt to the Promised Land. And here we have some clues, and we have some actually information, because if we're talking about the death of Aaron, we are explicitly told in chapter 33 of Bamidbar that Aaron dies in the 40th year. We're told here that Aaron dies when he was 123 years old on the first day of the fifth month in the 40th year of the wilderness. In other words, we are in the 40th year. The Israelite people are in the final year of their punishment, and this generation is waiting to go into the promised land. This explains why they're traveling. They want to make their way from what's now today the Sinai Desert, or maybe even the Negev Desert, and they want to make their way to the border of Israel. They're apparently going to take a different route and a different entry point, because we know that in the very last line of Parashat Chukat, they encamp in a place called Arvot Moav, over the border, over the Jordan from Jericho. So they're going to come in, as we see they do in the time of Joshua, from the east of the land of Israel, from the area of Jericho. Originally the spies intended to come through the south of the country. Now they're going to invade the country from the east. To get there, to get to Transjordan, they have to go through Edom and through Moab. However, Edom and Moab will not allow them access, won't allow them passage, and therefore they have to go on a long trek through the wilderness. So what have we said? We find ourselves in the 40th year, and Israel are making their way to the promised land. The direct route would be not that long, a couple of weeks' journey. However, the nations who are going to be their future neighbors, Edom and Moab, will not let them through, and therefore they have to take a very long trek through the wilderness. And this is where the two events that we read take place. The first is when they are attacked. And I said, why is this a relevant story? And I'd like to describe why. The reason which I find really relevant about the story about the king of Arad is not by what it tells us almost, but what is missing there. If you remember the story, I'll just read the line again. The Canaanite king of Arad, who lived in the Negev, saw Israel coming the way of Atarim. He engaged them in battle, he took a captive, and then Israel made a vow to the Lord and said, if you deliver this people into our hands, we will dedicate their towns to God. And this is what they did. I said it was an unremarkable story, but maybe what's remarkable about it is not what's there, but what's not there. Or maybe I'll be more accurate. Who is not there? Who is not there? Moses. We're so used to Moses taking the lead. We remember in the events of the first and second year of the wilderness that we read in the book of Shemot and Bamidbar, whenever the people encounter war, they panic. They go into a state of fright and they cry out to Moses. Here, they don't. Here, Israel make a vow. This is a confident people, a religious people. They know whenever they're in trouble, what do? They make a promise to God. We will dedicate the spoils to God. And God, we trust it that you will help us. I find Israel exhibiting a certain maturity here, a confidence. They don't need Moses. We don't know who made this vow, but it's by Yidar Yisrael. Israel and the collective make a vow. If you deliver us the enemy in this war, we will dedicate the spoils to you. And so God listens to Israel. Vayishma Hashem b'kol Yisrael. Moses, I wouldn't say he's sidelined. He's superfluous. Israel have now come of age. They are a people under God, and they know how to fight with God in their hearts and in their mouths. This is also true when we get to the next story. The people complain about the manna. They don't like it. They say, Nafshenu katza b'lechem ha-klokel. Again, in the JPS translation, we've come to loathe this miserable food. But in fact, Rashi has a different explanation, and he says, what is it lechem klokel? It's kalkal, it's light food. And in fact, according to one Midrashic tradition, the manna was such perfect food that it was completely ingested. According to this explanation, there was no excretion, there was no byproducts, there was no side products, there was no waste, because it was this special food from God, which was completely absorbed into the body. I'm not going to argue this on biological terms, but one of the commentaries says that what their complaint was very simple. They said, Inyanenu mishuneh. We are strange, we are weird, we are abnormal. Does any human being ingest without excreting? Again, I'll read their complaint. There is no water, there is no bread, and all we have is this light bread, this magic bread, this manna. What do the people want? What are they complaining about? They're saying, we want real bread. We want real water. They're not complaining about the manna as much as saying, we were just by the border of Israel. Couldn't we have just gone in? Now we have to go on a big trek to get there. Let's go in already. We're in the 40th year. Miriam has died. Aaron's died. All the people from the first generation are gone. We are the new generation. The curse of 40 years is over. Let us in. Let us be normal. So why does God send the snakes and the serpents? And I'm going to read you an explanation by Rabbi Samson Raphael Hirsch. And this is what he says. He says, an unusual grammatical form is used here. It doesn't say here that Vayishlach Hashem ba'am, God sent against the people, but Vayishlach, which predominantly has the meaning of letting something go. God did not send the serpents, but let them go, did not keep them back. The serpents had always been in the wilderness, but hitherto they had been kept back by God's careful protecting power. Now God withdraws his power, and the serpents of the wilderness follow their natural traits to which the people succumbed. Thus Moses describes the wilderness through which they had wandered unscathed through God's miraculous power as the great and terrible wilderness of poisonous snakes, scorpions, and drought. The poisonous snakes were as much part of the wilderness as the earth. The serpent's bites had the sole purpose of letting the people see the dangers which dog a person's steps when he goes through the wilderness, and that it was the miraculous power of God which had hitherto kept them far from them. So far, indeed, they did not even have an idea of their existence. What Hirsch is saying is, the dialogue goes like this. The people turn round to God and say to God, we want to get into Eretz Yisrael already. We don't want to be in this miraculous existence. We want to be normal. We want to be in a land. And God says, you want normal? I'll show you normal. I'll take away my protection. And you'll see that the snakes and scorpions of the wilderness will bite you. I still have to protect you. You still need my protection. And we still have to go a few stages until we go to the promised land. We're not there yet. You can't jump the gun. What's amazing in this story is the people receive their punishment and immediately they say to Moshe, they turn around and say, pray to God, Chatanu ki divarnu b'shem avach. Once again, they are penitent, they're repentant, they understand God's power, and they understand that they made a mistake. We have sinned by talking against you and against God. Again, I see a religiously mature people here. And maybe the greatest sense of maturity is that when they come to a place which has real water, they burst into song. And it says, Az Yashir Yisrael et Hashira Hazot, they sing a song to God, etc. And that line is so poignant. Az Yashir Yisrael et Hashira Hazot. We always remember the famous song by the sea. Az Yashir Moshe Uvnei Yisrael. Now, Az Yashir Yisrael. Israel sing by themselves. This parasha does have several complaints. But for example, when the people in chapter 20 complain for water, they're not complaining for water in the same way as they did in the first year. They turn around and they say, why are you going to kill us with thirst in the wilderness? Right? They say, why did you make us leave Egypt to bring us to this wretched place, a place with no grain, no figs or vines or pomegranates? There's not even water to drink. What is the land which has grains and figs and vines and pomegranates? Those are the Shiva Minim, the seven species of Israel. In the first year of the wilderness, they were always saying, let's return to Egypt. But now the people aren't saying, let's return to Egypt. When they complain, they're saying, nu, in that wonderful Jewish phrase, let us get to Israel already. We've paid our price of our sinning. It's time to go home. It's time to go to the promised land. It's time to start ourselves as a nation state, as a people within its land. That's why we came out of Egypt. We understand we had to wander for 40 years, a whole entire generation in the wilderness, but now it's time to go into the land. God has other plans. He decides that they're not going to go in through the south of the country, and indeed they need to take a very long route to get to their entry point. But when we read through the travels and the atmosphere of Parshat Chukat, we see two things happening. We see the leadership of the wilderness years dying away, but we also see the emergence of a new type of Jewish people. They're not a complaining people. They're eager. They're religiously confident. They sing a song to God by themselves. They make a vow to God by themselves. They aren't rebels. When they do something wrong, they apologize to God. But the thing they really would like is to move on with Jewish history to the next stage. They want to find their way to the promised land. Moses says, it's just a few weeks, it's just a few months. We've got to go through and do this. And I think that's difficult for these people. For 40 years, they've sat on the southern border of the land of Israel, assuming that that would be their entry point. And suddenly Moses takes them on a different route to a new entry point. It's sometimes difficult to change your expectations. But change them they do. And this is a people, not a perfect people, no people is, just like no human being is. But here we see a whole new Jewish people because we're looking at the second generation, the generation of the 40th year. All the people who left Egypt have died out. And here we see a group of people who were born in freedom, who were not scarred by the slavery of Egypt, and people who are ready to take their place in history as a nation in the land of Canaan, in the land of Israel. I wish you all Shabbat Shalom. Thank you very much for listening.
Thank you, Rabbi Israel. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll see you in the next episode of Pardes from Jerusalem.